For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Grip Lock Foundation Disc Golf's weekly podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor and Connor. Happy Memorial Day.
Hey.
Hopefully, y'all have some fun disc golf related plans.
Hello.
Maybe a little barbecue and ace race or something.
I don't know. In Memorial Day, you're not supposed to wear white.
No, that's I think that's the start of when you can start wearing white.
Or you can wear white.
That's a wedding, Trevor.
I think.
Either way, I feel like I could have run into that trap because I forget about it.
Yeah,
I didn't know about that. It's like a fashion thing. Or maybe it's after Labor Day.
I thought it was like we're celebrating like Memorial.
No. It's just a fashion rule.
Oh.
All right, I'm going to look it up.
Oh, is it like it's not summer enough?
Yeah, like
to
don't
wear white?
You can't wear white after. I think it's after Labor Day you can't wear white. I'm pretty positive that's the like fashion law, but no one does it anymore.
I was laughing before we started recording, Hunter, because it's just funny to me that like this is like the first time that any of us have talked to each other this morning.
Yeah, we just walked in and went straight to recording.
Before we started recording, guys, we said a total of like five words
okay,
to each
I
other.
I guess it's just like a no white until Memorial Day thing, like an old fashioned thing.
It's a fashion thing.
Okay. Yeah. I thought there was some. Okay.
So here's the new law. If I say something, no one Google to fact check me, I was right.
I think we'd all be in. Yeah.
Just believe
I don't
want
to live in that world.
We're going to first off talk to y'all about our Maple Hill experience. Then talk about the Saki Bomb general release. I want to bring up a little more of a question with that. Trevor's trivia. We have some updates on the DGPTQ series. And then we got a bunch of questions from Twitter. I can't talk this morning. I've almost said the words four times wrong. Like, see, what does even that mean?
And the Mavs went up 3-0.
The Mavs, yeah.
It's because you didn't warm your speech.
I didn't either. None of us did, apparently.
Apparently we have to talk in the morning.
No, you guys don't do that like on the way here on Mondays?
We usually come
my
in.
My vocal warm-up?
Lemons.
I usually get here at 8 and we record at like 9. Yeah. It's 7 right now.
Our brains.
So I'm hours behind.
Yeah, it's literally 7:07.
All right. Well, before we get into all of that, let me tell you about a little something. If you love disc golf and want to make sure that you are in the know for new disc releases, restock, and foundation custom stamps like the Con Man, Sean Man, the Trevor Stop Supers, or the Bleep coming in July that you do not want to miss.
He actually just wrote down Bleep.
Well, yeah, I didn't want anyone to know what I was talking about.
Nobody knows.
Then you need to sign up for our email list. Our newsletter is sent out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern and gives you a rundown of everything new on the site. We also hold big drops and big restocks for that time as well to make sure that you email subscribers are the first ones to know what's going on. So if you love shopping with Foundation or you're looking for a way to stay in the know of when discs are releasing before it's too late, click the link in the description down below or in our show notes and sign up for the email list today.
Gosh dang. Yeah. Oh, I know what the Bleep is in July.
Yeah, it's big, huh?
Oh, you guys are going to want to know about the Bleep in July.
I can't wait to
July.
Get my hands on a first run Bleep.
I think it's our biggest Bleep release. It's our biggest release. I don't know. I don't need to add a Bleep there.
I have no idea what's happening.
It's our biggest release since the fall of 2022, maybe? Or was it? No, it was the fall of 2021. We haven't had one of these since 2021.
It's a pretty big bleep.
It's been like it's been almost three bleeping years. Since we did a bleep.
I just bleep my shorts.
Let's talk about Maple Hill, shall we? So if you didn't notice on Simon Lazotte's channel, you might have seen your boys in a little video with him where we got to throw the glitch, the parachute, the what was the third one?
The glitch, the pitch, and the parachute.
The aluminum glitch.
And they're all the same.
So now you know we got to play Maple Hill. So we flew in Thursday. We went straight to the course. We played the Golds with Simon. The video for that is dropping tomorrow.
Yeah, you probably haven't seen Simon's video. It's only got like 250,000 views or something by now.
And then we played nine holes of the Reds, which is what you watched in Simon's video. And then Friday morning, we got up and we played our monthly match on the Diamond layout, which is the FBO layout. That video will be dropping next week. So we got the full experience of Maple Hill, basically. We got to play the Golds, we got to play the Diamonds, we got to play nine holes of the Red. So what I want to talk through here is we cover this a little bit in the video, but tomorrow it's not going to be any spoilers. We won't talk score so that you can watch tomorrow and see our experience happen. But I wanted to kind of just go over what we thought of the course, because at the very end of the video we did a recap, but I feel like it'd be good to, like, on Griplock, let people know, because it's a Pro Tour course. We actually got to see some of the changes that's coming for this year's Pro Tour, which is sick. And just kind of give y'all an overall experience. And then if you want to watch us have that experience for yourself, you can tomorrow on our main channel. So, thoughts on the overall experience on the grounds? Just the overall course, vibe, design, stuff like that.
Yeah, so I'll start from the beginning. You pull into the parking lot, and it's not, it's one of those courses where it's not super out of the way. It's a little bit out of the way, but not super out of the way. There's houses all around. It's just more of like a rural area. But you kind of expect that, seeing as you're going to a Christmas tree farm.
Honestly, for a Christmas tree farm,
I did not think it was
very not out of the way.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Considering it's a Christmas tree farm.
I'm saying out of the way as far as main cities, but not out of the way as far as civilization at all, all things considered. You pull into the parking lot. The parking lot's a little underwhelming just because it's not huge. So it's just kind of this gravel lot, and you kind of can see, like, there's an old barn, and you kind of can get your first view of the 18th green and the pro shop. And you're kind of like, okay, like, you know, nothing crazy yet. But then when it really hits you is when you walk just to the left around the end of the barn to the first tee, and you see the first hole, and you're like, oh, like, it very much looks picture perfect, exactly like it looks at how you imagined it. It's very, very cool. And the rest of the course for me was just like a continuation of that feeling, getting to each of these signature holes, and there's a lot of them, and just being like, yep, that's delivering exactly what I was hoping it would whenever you see it on camera, and more sometimes. It's a super hard course, really, really fun. The property was great. They have a cool pro shop. And yeah, like it delivers. I mean, the amount of layouts they have as well is so cool. Like, you can play the course so many different ways, and they have something for every skill level. And yeah, I thought it was fantastic, well maintained. The service was good. Yeah, everything was good about it.
Yeah, I think I had talked, I think, on this podcast about how I was, like, terrified to play there because I had such high expectations.
I was too, yeah.
And I was like, just, I was 100% positive I was about to be let down. I wasn't let down. It was awesome. So when I pulled into the parking lot, I had that feeling of like, oh no, I'm about to be let down, because the parking lot is kind of underwhelming.
It's just a gravel.
I also, side note, I don't know where they park people from Maple Hill.
I have been trying to think about it.
Like, there must be a field somewhere that they shuttle people from.
There's something going
on. Because, like, you could fit 30 cars, 20 cars in that lot.
More than that. Maybe 30 to 40 cars at most.
Yeah, that'd be like an inch between them, I think. It was not a big lot.
No.
So if you're having hundreds of spectators and hundreds of competitors, I don't know where they put those cars, but they put them somewhere because it happens every year. So they have some type of plan for that.
Hey, I don't know who they let park there during the event, because, like, not
probably
all the
just
players
staff.
Can. Yeah, it's
yeah.
probably the staff.
So there's got to be they obviously have somewhere they let people park. That's not that big of a deal. But when we pulled in, like, it just kind of is like a gravel lot. There's a house right there. The barn's right in front of you, and then you have the pro shop. But yeah, once you walk over to hole one, it just turns into this, like, almost perfectly manicured, like, just disc golf heaven. Because I was thinking through, and, like, there's one hole that I was like, I forgot about the second time we played it, which was that, like, tunnel shot. I think it's 15.
Yeah.
That was
it's a pretty good hole, though.
It's a good hole, though. Yeah, yeah, but, like, that's the only forget... Like, if I were to walk through in my head, because I did this before we played Diamond, because I was trying to think of, like, think through all the shots, that's the only hole I couldn't really remember, which is incredible, because typically you play a course and, like, there's three or four forgettable holes. I would say there's five or six, maybe even more, signature holes.
Yeah, my least like favorite holes were probably, I think it's the like 15 was like whatever, but then the two on the front were I think back to back, and I want to say it was like 6 and 7 that were both tunnels. Like one finishes up by the stone wall, cuts right, and then the other one was just straight up the hill, super far tunnel. Yep. Those two holes.
But
to
I
me,
love hole six. It's like I remember it vividly.
I don't think, I mean, they're not bad holes. Like, those are the ones to me of the entire course that kind of just like, eh.
7 and 15 were the two worst holes, in my opinion, but they're great holes.
And they're also right next to two of the best holes in the course, being 8 and 14.
Oh, yeah, because the tough part with that stretch you just brought up is you go, 4 is a very iconic hole. It's that, like, tough flex shot hole, 400 some feet. 3 is that hole. 4 is the downhill to the water. 5 is the forehand over the water, and then you have 6, 7, it's and kinda, then you get to hole 8.
It's your first, like, oh, these holes aren't, like, super iconic, but they're not bad holes.
Yeah.
They're hard. That's probably why I didn't like them.
One of the things I loved was the rock wall for OB that, like, separated hole, what, because that's separating hole 6 from hole, like, the left side of hole 1. I'm pretty sure is where that rock wall comes in, and then the rock wall is obviously on 1 and on 18.
The rock
really
wall
cool.
is, yeah, it plays, like, we've always seen it, and I think liked it, and there's definitely a slight element of randomness to the rock wall, but I think more so than just, it's not about the rock wall element of it, it's about the fact that it's the height of it, and the way it's positioned around baskets at that course is interesting.
Well, I think it is the rock wall aspect just because the optics.
Yeah, it looks It definitely looks really nice. I'm just saying really as far as how it plays, it's about just the fact that you have this OB that's like 3 feet high in most areas, and it's placed in spots where it can be your best friend or your worst enemy, because you can run into it and bank towards the basket, or you can be putting over it to where if you miss your putt, you're sailing straight over at OB. It's a very interesting OB. We don't see it a lot because usually if you see OB walls of any kind, they're pushed far away from the basket, whereas these stone walls get really close to the greens. And it's interesting because, like, players love to complain about stuff in the circle, but I've never heard anybody complain about the rock wall being in the circle. I think it's because it's Maple Hill. It gets, like, and I think it's great. I think it provides a really interesting element of, like, you now don't want to putt from certain areas. And Maple Hill is full of those because you have a lot of water and, like, downhill greens towards water at that course as well. So there's a lot of times, or drop-offs. I think there's, like, 2 or 3 holes of drop-offs. That course is filled with, you do not want to be putting from here.
Well, I think that's what one of my takeaways with, because the course design out there was just very well thought out, because, like, for a Christmas tree farm, you would think, like, I don't know, the Christmas trees could have easily just been, like, you just throw into the middle of them and then you're just super random.
Yeah, no.
But the way they're placed is, like, they are almost a rough on a lot of holes.
Yeah.
To where there is the randomness, but it, like, provides scramble opportunities on a shot that you're just, like, gripping and ripping.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed.
I thought hole one is the only hole to me where, yes, there technically is an area between the trees you can land.
Yeah, but you're just throwing into the trees.
But you're mostly throwing into the trees because that's such a thin area. It's such a long shot. But every other hole featuring trees, they were meant to be avoided and can be avoided with a good shot.
And a lot of them were forcing, they were taking away airspace, which I thought was very creative. Like, hole
10, is that? Up the hill?
That's what I was trying to think. I think that is 10.
I believe it
10
is.
Or 11. It's 370 feet uphill. It's like on a castle. It's like, look how it looks, how the green's built.
Yeah, and longest disc golf hole in the history of the world.
And the trees on the right side. Oh, shoot. I didn't take the trash down. Liz just texted me.
Oh,
I would imagine I would imagine she's texting me because
the trash is coming on Memorial
Day?
Surely
the trash isn't going on Memorial Day.
No way.
Sorry you knew that.
I would say, is it running on Memorial Day?
No, it's not supposed to run on Memorial Day. That's why I didn't take it down.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to ask her, because then if she saw the trash truck come by, I'd be like, I'm sorry, I didn't think it was going to run on Memorial Day. She doesn't listen to this, so she won't hear my scheming. Anyways, what it did on that hole was the trees took away airspace, which almost forced it. She said, I can hear it go down the road. Dang it. and almost really? Forced it going nose up. So it like it forced it to be almost like a stall-y type shot.
Yeah.
Which I loved. Like it happened there. It also happened on
it was
the par four that went like up the hill and down into the woods.
Whichever par four there was, well, there was two par fours.
No, I think it was 12 because then 13's the par three and then 14's across the water.
Yeah, there was two. There was two par fours that both utilized it. Both of like kind of the landing area ones. One of them made you throw higher if you were going on the right side. That was the one where like the gap if is up to the right, and then the other one where the basket was up on the edge of the woods. That one, if you were right, the trees were taller in that rough. So you had like that's where you end up in that little gap, but you could have been in a worse spot because there was taller trees over on the right.
That was the downhill one. That's not the one I'm talking about. Yeah. The one I was talking about was the one that goes like up the hill and they just put those trees in the middle of the gap. Yeah,
that's the other one.
Regardless, I really liked the way they used the trees and the way they protected the greens. Because like Trevor was saying, a lot of the greens were tricky to access, and then if you gave yourself a long putt, it made you think. Because they weren't just flat, wide open circles. All of them had, they used elevation very well out there. I don't know, I just think it's something that if you're a course designer that you're trying to design with the intent of being on the Pro Tour, that's the type of course to go play and just like take a notebook and be like, because it seemed like every green and design intent.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
The intention out there was very intentional to like make a player think on every shot, which is, I think, what makes it so good. Because it's not like, for us, that course isn't super scorable, but for a pro distance, that course is scorable. But it's also a very difficult course because it requires you to think and execute on pretty much every single shot you throw out
there.
There's
not a single hole that allows you to just throw 1 to 3 okay shots and make birdie. You have to play a hole perfectly to make birdie on like every hole.
Yeah. Now with distance, it definitely takes some of the difficulty away, because like especially on the back, you can just grip and rip on a few of the holes and just get so far up there that
even
the scramble's
those, even
chippy,
those
upshots, but
like,
it still is a tricky upshot.
Yeah,
even if you're 120 feet out, it's still a tricky upshot.
We saw a few times where Simon was getting way up there, but like you still got to miss a lot of trees.
Yeah. Now, the other thing we got to see was the Mando on hole one.
Mm.
After seeing it in person, what's your thoughts?
So, yeah, this was probably the most surprising thing about Maple Hill. But the Mando, I liked it more in person. I still think that... I think I liked it more because now after playing it, I think I realize how much difficulty it adds to that hole, because having it like having the ceiling to deal with along with the right and left Mando is very difficult. However, I'm still going to stand by and say there was a more tasteful way to do it. But I have decided I'm not going to get worked up about it anymore, because it doesn't look that bad when the trees have kind of come in around it and like kind of brought, like they've grown in more and kind of brought it into the environment more. It doesn't stand out as much. I also think as that red, bright red paint kind of fades a little bit, it'll probably look a little more part of the course. I think it was like that fresh set of red paint. The trees hadn't kind of quite grown in. It was very like it was standing out. It's also way bigger. In person, it doesn't look like a miniature golf obstacle as much as it looks like a house. So I definitely like it more now. I still, like I said, I wouldn't have done it that way, but I'm not going to get worked up over it.
That's what I was surprised seeing it in person, how much it didn't bother me. I liked it a lot. Like, well, if I was just playing there like we were and I wasn't thinking Pro Tour and I was just thinking I'm playing a course, I'd be like, this is awesome. Because for some reason, in video and in pictures, it looks so much smaller, and it looks like someone just put like a random little barn like shed out there. But like in person, it felt much more purposeful. Not like a let's throw this here really quick, but like a let's integrate, like let's build something to integrate into this course. And so I thought it felt a lot better in person. I thought that looked fine, and it doesn't really bother me.
Yeah, the size definitely helped it, but my I still don't like it. I liked it from, if it was on my local course, I'd think it's sick. Mm-hmm. But I don't like it for the Pro Tour because it's still just, the majority of the audience is going to consume it through camera. And yeah. with a picture or from camera, like the only thing I think that's the saving grace of it is the size.
Yeah.
And the size won't be communicated through camera. Through, yeah. So, and also to me, the trees are about the height of the top of it. And I think you could accomplish the exact same difficulty with a double Mando. Because I think what it was more trying to accomplish is preventing people from like going right or left and getting lucky of the like main mm-hmm. gap. And a double Mando accomplishes that.
Yeah.
You can still get lucky high though.
But I don't think that was, from my perspective, I don't think that's the shot they were most trying to protect.
No, it didn't sound like it. It sounded also like it was like, mostly the right side, I think.
And if you're really worried about getting protecting the high, just put a green board across. It'll blend right in.
Also, if
with
you
the
get
tree,
lucky
and there
high,
you go.
Yeah. No, if you get lucky high on that hole, you're likely not landing on the green anyway.
Yeah, like if it's coming in high.
Fading or going too far.
Yeah, if it's coming in high, like, I don't know. Because it also, it's so big that if you're coming in too high, it's going to drop right there, and it'll probably save you from, like Connor was saying, yeah. hyzering way out OB.
It's true.
So, to me, I does it look better? Yeah, so it probably upgraded from a, like, this is ridiculous, I can't believe it, to just, I hate it. I think it just upgraded to there.
Yeah, I just don't, I'm not bothered by
it. I didn't mind, again, if I'm just an everyday player, yeah. I don't, it's great. Who cares? Yeah. You know, it's a fun little quirk. I don't want fun little quirks on the Pro Tour, personally.
It doesn't but hit no, him with no fun quirks.
I understand what it, I think it accomplished its job well. I mm-hmm. just think there's much better ways to accomplish that job that aren't still a giant red barn.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a fair point.
So yeah, the size of it are. Definitely helped. So I can understand somewhat of like, they put it in and they're probably like, everyone's freaking out on social media. Probably like, why are people calling it a carport? This yeah. thing's huge. It's yeah. like an RV port. Still is going to look like a carport on cover.
Yeah. Until somebody walks under it.
Yeah. yeah.
It's like, it's probably, it's one of those illusions. You see somebody walk under and be like, huh?
Yeah. But like yeah. I said, I think the double Mando would have accomplished the same thing. Or if you're really worried about the high, like a green board or like a piece of wood that still has bark on it from a tree. Or like there's a number of ways to accomplish it.
Sure.
That's not the.
Or like a log cabin.
No, I just don't understand why it has to be a house. Yeah, why it's got to yeah. be a structure
what
like
about
that?
Like a condo? Like,
but beyond, because I think the other thing is, again,
it's like only suggest
houses. The like this type of thing at USDGC, mm-hmm. I'm fine with because USDGC okay. is known for like gimmicky type
artificial
stuff. But if you look at the rest of the like course, that. the wooden structures that are built are all that like natural looking wood. Everywhere else on the course, like the hole 14 built up green, hole 10's built up green. The OB on a lot of places is the rock wall, and the only like non-artificial, non-natural looking stuff is the sponsorship stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Like that's it. So that's more to me is like you have this course that leans into the natural beauty everywhere but hole one. Mm. That's more what throws me off.
Yeah,
I is it like that. It?
That's fair.
It brings in everywhere else. There's like super attention to detail, super just natural looking everything, and like even the built-in man-made structure are still like raw wood looking, except for hole one. You have a bright red barn.
Yeah,
that's cool. More my take on it. Final thoughts is playing alongside Simon and getting to throw shots right after Simon threw shots. Obviously, we won't go into score. But I don't think anyone expect us to beat Simon. We were just playing singles. All three of us were playing singles. So you can understand that. What was that experience like?
It's pretty crazy. I think, I've played obviously with guys who throw far a number of times, but I think this was the first time I've ever played, like, I'm trying to think, like, I've never played New London with it. Like, I've played, like, Brody obviously throws far. But I think even he would say he doesn't have Simon distance, certainly. And just the way it effortlessly pops out of his hand is crazy. And I don't think I've ever played a course of this difficulty with a pro of that caliber, both distance wise and just accuracy as well, to where, yeah, I was just watching him accomplish shots. Like, I mean, he probably threw half of his drives, or maybe just a little less than half of his drives, as if he was pointing and just being like, I want it to fly like that. I mean, he probably walked off the tee pad four times and said, yeah, that's probably the best I've ever done on this hole. Or, yeah, you probably couldn't ask for anything better than that.
Yeah, or that's ideal.
Exactly. And the times he didn't, Connor's like, great shot. He's like, was it?
It was, it was crazy. It's effortless distance.
Typically, he would explain to you guys what the ideal shot is for the hole, and then he would
throw. And then he would throw that exact same shot.
He'd be like that? And he'd be like, yeah, more or less.
For me, because I've played alongside a number of different pros at different courses, but I think what Maple Hill did is, like, New London, for instance, is probably the place I played with the most, because we played with, like, Drew out there, we've played with Paul, we've played with Brody. But New London, probably 85% of the landing zones, the ideal landing zones, we are capable of reaching. So, like, it doesn't, like, the only ones where you see them throw shots that's, like, mind-boggling is if they're going for the eagle on 7 or, like, the drive on 9. Beyond that,
Drive on 18.
But most of the, ideal landing zones, like, they might be throwing a mid where we're throwing a fairway, or they might be throwing a fairway where we're throwing a driver, but we're trying to get to the same spot.
Yeah.
Here, what was crazy was, like, there was just shots that, as a normal human, I couldn't even fathom. Like, it was just like, that wasn't even... So Simon would, like, describe where we want to land, and then he would throw nose up 150 feet past us. And, like, he's like, yeah, you want... If you're here, you're in a good spot. And then he would, like... And then we're talking, like, this grassy field, and then he's going over the hill into the woods attacking. And it was just like... Like, it was stuff that you... Like, that was what was kind of crazy. And it didn't... It never looked like he threw it hard. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know he was by how far the disc was going. But he just has effortless distance. And I think that was like a really cool experience, was playing a course where there is such a drastic disparity between the distance that you could attack on certain holes, mm-hmm. and getting just to watch discs fly right before or right after I threw and see them do things that I just like could not make a disc do,
mm-hmm.
distance wise. It was pretty crazy for me. So I thought that was cool. But if you want to watch all that.
This is the first time filming you guys playing with somebody and it being like jarring watching the difference of a disc come out of somebody else's hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it was just really, because he would throw and then I would see you guys go up and throw, and it was just like, was just because he throws so effortlessly, but when the disc comes out of his hand, it's going so fast.
It was wild.
Every other pro that we've played with, that the disc comes out of their hand really fast, it's almost like overshadowed by the fact that they look like they're throwing the disc really fast. Like they look like they're putting a lot of effort into it.
I think only other pro, and it's nowhere close, is still not on the same level, is Brody has some of that sneaky distance.
Yeah. But he's like, so big.
But yeah.
Like
Simon just like is so lanky, but he's not that tall.
Mm-hmm. No, he's like 6 foot.
So it just, because like Paul, Drew Gibson, like they look like they're throwing hard as crap they throw hard as crap. Because
I mean, we filmed with Wiggins, and Wiggins throws.
Yeah, Wiggins. Throws,
he puts everything.
He throws,
into,
you know, arguably and technically with the record further than Simon. Like even Simon would say that, you know, he's got a serious, serious arm, but he is built like a linebacker and he puts everything into it.
Yeah.
Simon, man, he just like creeps up on the tee pad and all of a sudden, boom.
That was just wild to watch, because like I really want to play next to Eagle. I feel like Eagle would be.
I think he's got similar things.
Similar.
Going. Yeah.
But it was because I'd watched Simon play, but I'd always watched Simon from the like gallery at a Pro Tour event. And you can't see it. Versus like I'm right there and I watch him throw and then I watch Trevor throw right after. And it was just like,
dang.
Well, you mean you watched me. I didn't watch myself throw. I couldn't watch myself throw.
It was like you guys were throwing parachutes out there.
Yeah, it was mind-boggling. Like to watch, like, because what was crazy is like, run up speed and stuff, we might have been running up faster than Simon.
He does run up sneaky fast though.
Yeah, he's just a scurry speed. He's just so smooth.
He does
that, like,
scurry.
The speed he's doesn't really translate to your eyes until the disc comes out.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Very light on his feet.
It's very cool. But all right, so Maple Hill, if you want to watch us get to experience basically everything we just talked about and just watch us play, because how the video is going to go basically is we just play 18 holes. And we'll, like, throw in a few different, like, when we get to iconic holes, we'll talk about it a little bit. But for the most part, it's just us having a great time playing with Simon. And then on hole 18, we kind of give our thoughts on the course. And it probably sounded different than what we just said, because that was just, like, right from the moment. So if you want to watch all of that and watch us experience it firsthand, tune in tomorrow, 5 p.m. Eastern time, when the video drops on our main channel. You're not going to miss that. And then, like I said, next week, I think on next Thursday... Or next Tuesday?
One of the two.
One of the two. Either Tuesday or Thursday is when the monthly match drops. And what's exciting about that is we play the diamond layout. So, yes, we're battling each other, but we were also battling the FPO field from 2023 Maple Hill Open, MVP Open. Because, I mean, if you're listening, you probably have thought the same as us of like, I want to just see where I stack up, mm-hmm. you know? So, exciting stuff. You can watch that next week. So, you have this week gold, next week diamond. A lot of Maple Hill content. I don't think anyone's going to be upset about that. Now, this past weekend, for us, it was on Friday, but the Sake Bomb General release happened. And why I wanted to bring it up is this is the most expensive quote-unquote stock, because I believe it's just their stock plastic and everything, disc release that I remember coming in at an MSRP of $32.99.
Ooh, that so is crazy.
I went back and looked at the Sake Bomb Felon because that was the exact same plastic. From what I can tell, it looks like that disc was $30 MSRP, but Dynamics actually running it on sale for like $17 right now. And they have it like crossed out and it says $32.99 next to it. So I don't know if that was like a sales tag. Cause when I looked back at like the releases and what people are selling it for, it was $30.
Okay.
So there's a chance the Sake Bomb Felon was the same, but either way, it brings up the same point. Cause a reminder, this is in their Royal or Supreme line plastic, which House of Discs, this is like House of Discs line of like truly premium plastic. We've talked about it a bunch. It really does feel incredible. But what are your thoughts on a disc at this price point? And is there room for it in the market, or do you think it's just going to be a flop?
Well, I think I don't understand why it's this price point.
Well,
expand.
Like, why did they make, why, what about it makes it this expensive?
Okay.
Like, because it's not different.
So right. what would be the answer that would satisfy you if you ask that in someone?
Inflation.
Well, but like inflation doesn't work because the rest of the market is still selling it for $20.
I mean, I know that
bucks.
Like I don't know if this would satisfy me, but I'm sure.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
There's a lot of people prices. Satisfy is it's a limited release.
But I'm saying
that still doesn't tell me that's worth them.
From what I understand, this is like their stock plastic.
Yeah.
This is the stock general.
I don't know what they would have to tell me to get me to spend that much money on a disc.
Yeah.
I mean, back in the day, just if it said Paul's name, I guess I would do it.
The problem is, the problem is that, you know, I've always said there's room in any kind of industry, especially when it comes to a hobbyist or sports industry, for the most expensive thing. There's always room for that. Yes. You know, you get into golf, for example, and your buddy's playing these PXG clubs or whatever, like, and a lot of them will buy it because it is the most expensive. If you're somebody who is either wealthy or just willing to pour a ton of money into something, then you may just be like, I want the nicest, most expensive thing. However, the problem is we already know what this plastic is.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
And the disc doesn't do anything. I mean, it's a disc, woohoo, but you know, this would be completely different if they had come out with a brand new plastic and advertised it for that price.
Yeah,
guess what I would have thought? Ooh, that's intriguing.
Maybe it's a little more premium.
I would have been like, oh, now that's interesting, because I would have been skeptical, but I would have been willing to, maybe if I'm a consumer, even buy it just to see what all the fuss is about.
Mm-hmm.
But because I know what their Fusion Burst, you know, Orbit type plastic, whatever it is, Fusion Orbit plastic feels like. Or Supreme Orbit or whatever it is, and you know that's really all you can upcharge me for. You can't upcharge me for just a mold of a disc. I'm not gonna buy that, you know, metaphorically or literally. But so yeah, that's where the problem is. And you know, at the end of the day, yes, supplier pricing has gone up, inflation has gone up, disc prices have risen. However, there are still a lot more affordable options in the market.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to spend that much money, and that's you know, that's the biggest issue. Is the more some of these manufacturers increase their prices, and you know, there will always be Ricky Wysocki fans that are willing to support him because yes, a significant portion of that disc goes to him. But the more the prices go up for certain companies, there's going to be a lot of opportunity for other companies to start creeping in and start playing the budget game. Disc golf was never a sport where that was a thing. You know, when I got into disc golf, the most premium disc you could buy stock was $15.99. And that was for a star, like, Innova star caliber disc. And that was the most expensive thing. So if you wanted to actually have margins as a company, you couldn't play the budget game, because if you sneak in at 12, like, I'm still going to buy the $16 disc if I know it and it's great. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, and it's crazy because I feel like it was just 2 or 3 years ago I started talking about this, and I was just like, couldn't even fathom a $33 stock disc. But all of a sudden, if a stock disc, and I know it's Tour Series and this isn't, we're not quite there yet, but if it's $33 and there are companies offering awesome premium discs for $19, you know, now we're talking about a serious decision, because now it's like, okay, I can buy a second disc for the price of one. Like, it is so hard as a consumer, and anybody who has ever, as a kid, decided, or as an adult even, decided, okay, which disc am I going to buy? I'm mixing and matching and trying to get the best bang for my buck and do this and that. It's really hard to put the $33 one in your cart when you're knowing, but I could get 3 practice putters for that price. Like, that's what this comes down to. And so I think, you know, I can't just say Dynamic is awful, because for all I know, they're giving Ricky a bigger cut to try and compensate him for the contract they agreed to. That's important. They should. And maybe their supplier pricing is just going through the roof. I don't know their circumstances. I just know what effect this could have on the market. They can put a disc out for whatever price they choose. Nobody needs to get mad about it. It's just they're going to face the consequences if there are some.
Yeah. So because the Royal Line plastic in general, so I'm looking at the Royal Grand Trust, the stock one is $25.99. I'm going to be straight with you. I would pay that for that disc. Maybe not for the Trust.
I would not.
But for the Honor, the Brave, I would try out. The Rive.
Yeah, this feels good.
I love that plastic.
I haven't
right?
felt
and when
any
the
Because
what we have to remember
plastics.
Right now is if you're going and buying, because for us, it's a little, we get a little bit lost in translation, because like, I still think of, when you tell me Star plastic, I'm still like, oh, $16. It's not. It's like 19 now. And like, if you're that buying hurt. A Lucid disc, it's $20. So we're talking $6 more than the top end premium plastic for this.
I
would buy that.
It's a big jump.
When I feel it every time, I think I'm paying that.
Yeah, it feels like a high
premium
quality.
It's like the it is the best feeling plastic in the market to me, which feel is all subjective.
26.
So I would pay 26. When you get to the Grand Orbit Trust, it goes up to $29.99 for their burst one. Right.
Mm-hmm.
What's confusing a little bit is you also have a Grand Orbit Trust that's the Albert Tam 2024 edition, $27.99. So I don't know if there's like something bumped the price up recently, because the Grand Orbit Trust, I think, is more recent than the Grand Orbit Albert Tam Bazooka Trust. So that is already a $2 increase. But then the Saki Bomb one general is another $3 above that Grand Orbit Trust. So, to me, the $32.99 is just too big of a jump, right? But the 26, I think, because I think that's what the Royal and the Supreme plastic, I think that's what they're trying to lean into, is that really premium. In my opinion, the best way to have done this would have been a different brand.
That's what exactly
that is like, because that's my correct. My thing is like, you have, it still has the Latitude logo on it. It still has the Dynamic logo on it. So like, even within the same exact brand, I can get this Royal Grand Trust for $26, or I can scroll down and get this, you know, Gold Compass for $24, or this Lucid Truth for $20. Like, I
gosh,
within the same brand,
crazy.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's to me, like, if they would have launched. If they would have turned Casaplast into this, right, where Casaplast already is known for its plastic, right, and they release a brand new Casaplast disc that they're marketing it as almost like Discmania did with that Italian C-line, like, they go like that route, basically, and then they drop it at $26, like, of course people are buying that. And if it felt like, if that's
like
the marketing,
too.
Like, if that's the marketing behind it, right, and it's like a premium, leaning into the luxury, whatever, and then you get the feel of the Royal. So I'm already thinking that premium mindset. There's this new a new brand logo on it, blah, blah, blah. I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
when it comes in and it's just another dynamic disc or another latitude disc where you already have a preconceived brand identity for them, then it's a harder sell in my... It's why a Lexus logo can have the price that a Toyota can't.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you put a Toyota thing on a Lexus, they would sell it for a lot cheaper. Mm-hmm. Because it's just people aren't going to pay that.
Yeah.
I think that's the problem they're going to back themselves into here. Because I asked a Twitter poll, and 59% of people said the most that they would pay for a disc was $20 to $25, which I think that makes sense.
Yep.
23% said they would pay $25 to $30. That number also didn't surprise me. I think that's the market the premium
yeah.
line would go to. It's like, okay, well, 23% of people.
25 to 30 is the most I would pay for. That is the disc I want. So bad. It's got a custom stamp. It's certainly not.
No, I was asking stock.
Okay,
I was explaining like, then.
I would never go above 20.
Yeah,
for
that's
a stock
what I'm saying.
Disc.
You would be in the 59%. I think I would fall in the 23%. Where if it was marketed to me right, I could get drawn into the like.
I think I feel similar to that.
Like, oh, I got it. Oh, it has blah, 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 blah.
If it was a brand new company that was marketing a luxury brand, sure.
This was just worded like the most you would consider
paying
for.
But anything I felt with my two hands, no shot.
Yeah. Only 5% said they would pay $30 plus.
Because.
Which again, that number makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, there's going to be a few people, sure. But like, I think the price point that should be hit right now is that like 25 to 30, which is what Royal Line does. I personally just think Royal should have been a new company, you know?
Yeah.
Because like, they're already having to remake all the molds and get them reapproved. Yeah. And a lot of them, they're releasing new molds. So like, I think that should just been launched as a new company that's just like all marketed towards the most luxurious, the most premium. Like, and that's the market share you're going for. Because what's crazy about House of Discs is if you launch that company and it's the most luxurious, most premium, you can undercut yourself. You can make, you could choose Westside as your, oh, we're going to use Westside to be our, you know, direct to consumer only brand. And we're selling them to consumers for $15 or $14.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, that's the other thing to think through here, right? Is right now the funnel from pretty much all manufacturers goes manufacturer to retailer to consumer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which means the manufacturer has to protect their margin, but they also have to protect the margin of the retailer, which means the consumer's paying the most. Mm-hmm. So there isn't really a brand yet that cuts the middleman of the retailer out. Obviously, as a retailer, thank you. But that will come along, because then what happens is now you're in full control of the margin as the manufacturer. And you can sell to the end consumer for what you're selling to retailers right now, make the same amount of money, but now consumers can buy a really premium disc for, you know, half the cost.
It's hard to lay off the temptation of the idea that a new exciting company comes along, and if you're just selling direct to consumer, you might sell some discs, but if you open up to retailers, you have certain unnamed companies that will just buy 1,000 of your discs.
Yeah, well, that's where I think House of Discs is the one that makes the most sense to do it, because then they would have this arm that's just like, oh, we'll drop a new Kona Montgomery Tour Series, whatever, and we sell it to two retailers for 15, and we're going to sell 10,000 of them, and then we can drop a different disc over here, direct to consumer, and be able to, and like,
you
know what I'm saying?
I'd like to do a real case study on the prices of discs over the last few years, because, you know, at the end of the day, Royal Line, it's awesome. It's really consistent. It's really nice. It's plastic. Like, it's plastic. They're all plastic. And there's really, like, there's much cheaper plastic that feels awesome, too. The prices have soared over the last few years, just out of control. And I would love to know how much of that is related to the price of plastic, and how much is that related to companies saying disc golf is more popular. Let's see if people will pay more for it. I'd just be curious to know, because... right now, I'm not super involved in other sport hobbies, but I would just like to know if that sort of thing is happening in those industries as well.
I know pickleball paddles.
Well, I'm sure pickleball...
they went ludicrous.
I'm sure they took advantage of the boom, but you could still, at the end of the day, buy a pickleball paddle for very cheap if you wanted to just play pickleball. But like, I don't think you definitely
could. I mean, not very, what's very cheap?
You'd have to go on Amazon.
Yeah, you're not walking into a store and paying less than like $25 for a pickleball paddle.
Okay, you could go on Amazon then. That's not like a crazy thing to do. it'll be at your door in 2 days.
I was just saying, you walk into Dick's and you're paying like $60.
Well, that's because you walked into Dick's Sporting Goods.
And played again.
Dick's Sporting Goods, back in the day, you'd pay $25. They were the original $25 for a disc.
I played again. The cheapest like single paddle by itself was $45.
Yeah, I was played again.
It was crazy.
Okay,
we got to say to them.
Anyways,
yeah, it was just crazy. I'm not arguing with you, Trevor. I'm more just,
I was just
more,
saying pickleball
just
went crazy.
In an uprising about the prices of pickleball paddles.
Yeah, that's all I was trying to say.
I would like to know, like, because like, to my knowledge, and like I said, I might just not be caught up, but like golf ball prices, for example, obviously manufactured by much bigger companies on a much larger scale. But like premium golf balls have been like the $3 a ball, 12 a sleeve, or no, $4 a ball, 12 a sleeve, like kind of pricing model for a while. And there's a lot more new companies out there, but like that's what I want to know is like, I would love to just know what the bottom line really looks like and how much the price jumping has been due to, because like, man, the way it's jumped in the last few years, it would be like their supplier prices are going up every other month. And yeah, I don't know.
I was trying to read. I was like, you know what? I bet there's a chart for golf ball pricing.
Well, I'm just here.
The only post I can find is this guy was saying.
Well, how much does it cost for Pro V1s right now? Because I can tell you how much they cost back when I was working.
He was just saying the 2021 Pro V1s are $53 a dozen. Okay, so they're already $55. So they went up $5 since the beginning of 2023. For a sleeve. Or for a, what was that called? A box?
A box of golf, like a box of Pro Vs has been $50, around $50 a dozen since like, I was working golf courses in high school, like 2018. So like I'm saying, the price has not jumped significantly in that industry. And I know there's a lot of differences. I'm just saying, like, I want to know what these prices actually look like that for them to be cranking these prices up. Because disc golf, we have a beautiful thing in disc golf. We've always had where it is super affordable, and that was like our biggest advantage. And if all of a sudden the difference between me being like, and obviously we always have used discs. There's always going to be cheaper options. People will make cheaper options. I'm not worried about like some kind of collapse. But, you know, I don't want to be like, yeah, here's the sport disc golf. Oh, you really like that one? Yeah, it's $33. Like that's a commitment. Whereas it used to be, oh, you like that one? $15-16. Like that's the coolest disc in here? Yeah, it's less than $20. Like that, there's a huge difference. And it hasn't been that much time that's elapsed since that kind of thing. So yeah.
It doesn't bother me as long as there is, which there is, cheaper options. Like I think, yeah. Like the same thing like with, I mean, every industry has it.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
But like, because if someone walks in, they pick up a disc and you're like, oh, you fell in love with the Trust. Oh, it's $27. Well, look, here's a Buzz that's going to feel and fly very similar. You can get for $15 if that's too much. And it's like, oh, okay, sick.
The good thing
there
is,
because for a brand new player, you don't even know what disc golf's supposed to feel like.
Yeah, but you know it looks cool.
Yeah. I mean, the good news is that, yeah, because of that, we do have the luxury of the free market, and if people don't like that it's that expensive, then it won't sell well.
Well, here's the flip side. I would almost say that the most likely person to pay $30 for a disc is a brand new player who just doesn't know.
Yeah, well, because $30. Because
I got Discraft TI plastic came out. Mm-hmm. Back in, I don't know when it was, like 2015 or something. When I first got into the sport, I had only ever bought like used discs.
Yeah.
And then I saw Discmania advertising this new TI plastic. I think they were basically saying it was like indestructible, basically.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, Old Trusty still don't flip. And this is that disc. And
Old Trusty definitely flipped.
It just flipped up to flat. It wouldn't. That was the way I always thought it was going to turn. It never turned.
I only remember it just hitting trees right off the tee.
Well, that's the problem.
I can't even remember a shot watching it fly.
What I always would do is I would aim at a tree and I'd say, this disc is 9 years old or 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And I'd throw it on hyzer expecting it to flip up and ride, and it would flip up and go straight into that tree.
Yeah,
that's what happened every time. Beautiful. Is I always thought it would flip.
You should put that back
so,
in your bag.
So granted, it did hold up forever.
You got to put that back.
But I think I paid close to $20 back in like 2015 for it, for TI. But it was because that's how it was
back then.
That's how it was like described. And I just walked in. I didn't even know I couldn't tell you at that time the price of champ or star or anything. Mm-hmm. So $20 just sounded like.
Well, there's an interesting example you mentioned, though. So TI, they tried to do that kind of thing. It came in high. Probably not enough people bought it. Now TI is not that expensive anymore.
Well,
see that happen with Royal.
Also, back then, it was only gold and silver because it was supposed to look like metal, yeah. And it was embossed on there. They should bring back the embossing.
The embossing
first
was dope.
That was sick.
That was sick. Those were some of the coolest like looking and stamped discs out there.
I agree.
My whole point of it was like, if you're coming from an outside sport and you come into disc golf and you hear $26 for a disc, you're less likely to be alarmed than you've been in the sport for a long time, and you're like, I remember when that disc was 14.
Well, it does. Mm-hmm. It also depends on how you learn about the sport, though, because I can tell you how I tell people about the sport is, yeah, you should play. It's super cheap. That's like the first place I go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's fair.
So and then if they walk into a store and they're like, super cheap, what are you talking about?
If you're telling a golfer it's super cheap and they hear $26, they're like, heck yeah, it is. Because if they're thinking $500 for a driver, you can tell me I can buy, what is that? 4 times 20 of these things for the cost of one driver.
But the way they look at it might be more similar to a golf ball.
And you're telling
me
I can play this sport for free without having to pay a club fee?
Yeah, it's definitely still cheaper, but it's like, oh, $30 for this driver and I could lose it on my first time out. Like, you know, it's not.
I'm thinking like before I worked in disc golf and had access to a lot of discs like that, again, that I feel like that kind of skewed the way that I view these things. But I'm thinking at the height of my obsession with disc golf, like I'm going into whatever shop I'm going to buy discs and I've got like my money. That's like all the money I have as a high schooler. And I'm trying to squeeze every bit out of it because I need to have more discs to throw because I have this sick obsession with Frisbees, which I think would be the majority of people. I think that's just how disc golf works.
Yeah.
You have like, mm-hmm. You have some casual people, but most of the time when you get into disc golf, you get like obsessive over discs super quickly because that's the fun part. But I would, if I walked into, you know, the Play It Again in Charlotte where I used to buy all my discs from, and I saw like the brand new or like if whatever on the wall that was however much money, I would pick it up and I would look at it and be like, that's awesome. But I'm going to go to the U section and buy three discs instead.
I think the premium market, to sum it up, because I had this thought and I was like, this will make a hit home for everyone, right? I think the premium disc golf market, it isn't meant for your weekend warrior, you're playing MA1 and you're really good at disc golf, right? You know what you like, you're probably going to find it in the U section. It's not meant for them. It's meant for the MA3 player that shows up that we used to play a game called MA3 or Pro. Because when they got out of their car, you couldn't tell until they threw a disc. Mm-hmm. Because they were decked from head to toe in whatever their favorite manufacturer apparel was to look kind of sponsored. They had their Zuka cart or
they are sponsored street team.
They could be on the street team. They had their Zuka cart or their like pound bag. Whatever their setup was that they were carrying their discs in was like $500.
Mm-hmm.
And then it had every Tour Series disc possible in there.
Yeah.
That's who the premium market's for.
Yeah.
So if that's you and you're listening, sick. Well, head over to foundationdisc.com. There's a disc called the Saki Bomb General. You're going to love it. If that's not who you are when you're listening, next time you're at a tournament, be like, that's who they're marketing to.
But that's because...
Yeah, no, if your feelings were like, Trevor, dude, you're stupid and you sound like a dirty communist, you should go... If you want to dislike my take, buy the General from foundationdisc.com.
Yeah, I think that's a good way. Well, if you want to stick it to the man being Trevor... Foundationdisc.com.
So, the reason it's $33 is because I have royalties.
Well, you know what? This is actually great.
I just reversed
disc golf is a very unique sport in the sense of it is a sport where you have physical activity and somewhat of athleticism, and you have Pokemon cards at the same time.
True.
That's how people treat disc golf, like discs.
Great.
Well,
you're 100% right.
Some people just have the ones that they play disc golf with, and some people are like
I said,
look at this Tour Series.
My
disc.
Biggest
this,
issue
this,
with this is never just the price of a disc. It's the price of a disc I know, and is being priced like at the same plastic for significantly cheaper. Like that's where it comes down to. It's a product I already know. It's tough watching products you already know get inflated beyond what you believe they should be.
Yeah.
That's where it comes down to. Like I said, if this is a new product, I wouldn't bat an eye at it. I'd be like, ooh, interesting. Like I too can get allured by something new, exciting, and expensive. Old, not as exciting and expensive.
I mean, it is a brand new
mold. Mold. Yeah, but like it's when you're jumping price, I want to see technology innovation. This is how, and like
I think what it came down to is just the marketing flop.
And like golf companies lie to us every year and tell us how new drivers.
They didn't tell us why
were,
we were spending that much money.
That's what
on
I'm saying.
It.
I think that's I think what it just came down to is just the marketing, like the communication of why the price is, because they never even mentioned the price.
Well,
because
here's the thing:
you get to the
I could also I've talked about the plastic. I could be persuaded on a mold too if they market if all you had to do is probably just be like, we discovered this new driver mold with this blah 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 blah, and like I'd be like, okay, I'm not that hard to sell to. You know, like I was saying, golf companies every year they come out with a new driver and feed you some garbage about how it's going to hit the golf ball straighter, and everybody hands out their wallets. I've seen the commercials for TaylorMade this year. I'd have done it too. But like, that's, you just got to try a little bit. We want to buy your stuff. You just got to try a little bit.
Well, here's the deal. Okay. If you're sitting back at home and you really want to try the new Saki Bomb General or the any of the new stuff, right? And you're like, but do I really want to risk being out $27 to $32? Well, that's why we created this thing called Foundation Care. We created it originally, and it was like an add-on, but we're super excited to let you know that it's now included on all disc purchases made in the USA. So you can try out a disc however you want for 30 days, and if it isn't for you, you fill out the form on our website, and we'll swap it out for a disc free of charge. We even cover the shipping both ways. It's just that simple. So don't get stuck with a disc that'll end up on your shelf forever instead of in rotation in your bag. Make the right choice and shop at foundationdisc.com, where we're committed to helping you build your game.
Yeah, baby.
Time for Trevor's Trivia. Trivia with Trevor.
Trevor,
fan favorite segment.
Stop.
Okay.
That segment took a lot longer, so now I'm stressed because I have a bunch of Twitter questions from people.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, we're going to be on for about an hour and a half. Do we need to skip trivia?
No. We will never skip trivia. I'm thinking, do we need to skip the Q-Series stuff? We can talk about that any week.
That's true. We probably should.
So I think we'll skip that.
Okay. Anyways, well, it's a quick trivia game. I'll make it really
quick
fast.
Quick triv.
We're going to play a game that we played once before. It's kind of like a flight number quick reaction game.
Love
where
it.
You're going after like the total of flight numbers, if you guys remember this.
Yes.
So basically,
oh, no.
The way it works is we'll go back and forth. I'm going to spit out a number, and then you need to name a disc that it is. Remember, the equation is speed.
Yep.
And then you add the turn and fade. You ignore glide. So, for instance, a destroyer would be 12 minus 1 plus 3, right? That would be its total number.
So, it'd be 14.
So, I'm going to name the number, and then you have, I can't remember how much time I did, because I don't want to give you too much time to think. I'll say 5 seconds to spit out a disc as close as you can. I'm going to say 3 seconds. It's got to be really snappy, because I don't want to give you a chance to do math. 3 seconds to spit out a disc that you think is going to give you the closest total. Or we're going to go back and forth one at a time here, and go different numbers.
Now that you put a time limit on it, I think that you could say like, we're going to play a game where you have 3 seconds to name a disc, and I think that it would jam me enough to where I'd lose.
You can do it. If it's too hard, we'll increase the time. All right, Hunter, you'll go first. We got five here, so it's going to be, or we'll do six total. It'll be two or three each. Yeah, three each. Okay, Hunter. Your first number is 0.
Berg.
The Berg is his answer.
I have no idea.
That was scary.
Oh, that was so scary. 0's like, I mean, what? What? That's an awful one. That's terrifying.
The Berg flight numbers are 110. Well, the second one doesn't matter. So it's 102. So a total of 3.
3, yeah. Okay. I feel like that's probably as close as I'm going to get. You're not going to reuse numbers, right?
No.
I probably could win like Polecat or something.
Okay, yeah. Connor.
But that was the first one to me that came to my mind.
You ready?
It's okay, Connor.
So this is just like you're trying to get, like, I have
you
2 points.
I'm relaxed. You have 3 points. The number was 0. You had ended
up
with 3.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I'm relaxed.
All right, ready, Connor? Your number is 15.
Boss.
Okay. I think the bosses should be 13, right?
No, I think it's 15.
Or 15. Is it 15 on the
dot? Yeah, 13 minus 1 plus 3.
Wow.
I'm sweating right now. Nice. That's terrifying.
Okay. Hunter, your next number is 5.
Buzz.
Ooh, I like
you
that.
You guys are fast with it. Okay.
I don't remember if a buzz is a -1/1.
I don't remember either.
I think it might be a -1/2. Yeah. Let's see here. 5. Oh, it is a -1/1.
Perfect.
There you go. 5 on the dot. 5
great job,
minus
Hunt.
1 plus
great
1. Wow,
job,
you guys are
Hunt.
Doing better at this than you did last time. This is good. Okay, Connor.
Okay.
Your next number is 9.
T-Bird.
Oh, my gosh. You guys aren't even hesitating
right
now.
That's dead on, Con.
Dude,
that's going to be dead on.
You guys.
I think it's a 7502.
Are we hitting like the the best part of like our productive morning right now. That is a 7502. Holy
oh my
cow.
Gosh.
You guys did not do this well last time at all. This is insane.
Oh, okay. Wow. Apparently the time limit helped us.
Yeah. Okay. You each have one more. So Hunter okay. needs to be have a good one here. Your number is 11.
PD. Oh, I should have went Thunderbird. Thunderbird would have been right on it. PD is going to be 13. Dang it.
You're actually doing math. I'm going off of feel, how I feel when
resetting
the number.
10 yeah. with a 0-3.
Yeah, if I would have went Thunderbird, it would have been 9502.
So that puts you at 5. So yeah. Connor pretty much has it locked up, but his last...
The 0 screwed me.
...number is... Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'll hold you in suspense. 4.
Rock. I think that at least keeps me safe.
Yeah, it should be 7.
Yeah, I think your strategy
would,
there
I would
just
say,
name one that was the same speed.
I think it was 0-3.
It would just say something around it. 7. It would just say something around it. Would the Mako be there?
7
no,
total.
The original Mako would have been.
Okay. Well, Connor wins.
Oh, 4-0-0.
I do. My only qualm here, Trev, is I think the only one that was given that you can't exactly match was the 0. Or is there a disc you can exactly match it? I've been thinking about it the whole time.
0?
Is there a disc you can get to 0 with?
What would you need in order?
You'd need like a 2-2-0 or a 1-1-0.
There probably is.
That's my only qualm.
I mostly thought that 0 was going to be, it was going to balance out because like you immediately know to go very slow. So like you can stay around it. Like I said, last time I played this game, none of you guys got any perfect ones.
He didn't expect
I don't feel like that was how we played it last time.
I'm pretty sure
I don't
it was.
Remember.
I think the glide was a part of it.
Maybe it was.
I think the glide was.
It probably was. You know, that probably makes this more difficult, but I think the glide was a part of it
because it was really throwing us for a loop. Because
I was doing higher numbers.
Yeah.
Good point, Hunter.
I just had a set of discs
hand
in my
up,
head.
Trev sucks.
I knew that if I tried to think on the spot, I was going to freak out. So I just had a set of discs in each speed category. And I was just like, whenever he says a number close to this, just go with it.
Well, that's why as soon as he said the game, I was trying to think of just like neutral discs so you could just say a disc that you knew was a 5 speed, like the buzz. It was like, if you could nail a -1-1,
yeah,
you just had to the speed.
Got to put the glide back in.
Yeah, I think the glide was a part of it last time.
It definitely
time.
Was.
I think
it was higher numbers.
Yeah, because I think that was also, because I feel like we would say a disc and you'd be like, it was like a 4 glide, and we like swore it was a 6 glide.
Well, and also we had no idea like how, because I think the first time you said a number, we were like, what?
Yeah,
we're like it has to be
like
crazy fast, but then we were like, oh wait, it's all the numbers combined.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, because if it was, because then that would make the Destroyer 17.
Shout out.
Yeah.
All right, let's bang out these Twitter questions.
We don't have to hit all of them. We can just hit a few.
Are some of them like fire for debate night? Because like, please don't ask them.
I mean, you could bring some of these up.
Okay. Thank goodness.
I'm gonna skip a few now that I'll just start with some, and then I'll just get.
Let's just like go with the flow. You know.
So first one was from Addison
we got
Coleman.
10 seconds.
Love that guy.
This first one's from Addison Coleman. He said, "If Kristen retired after this year, would she be the GOAT?"
No. Well, let me put it this way. I would say yes to aggravate people, and I would believe in my heart that she was probably the best disc golfer like in the FPO division I'd ever seen, but I would not be able to refute the Paige Pierce arguments.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture, and the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, I wouldn't get aggravated by the Paige Pierce arguments.
It would just be the era argument.
Yeah.
I would basically say I think that Paige's body of work for a long enough time makes her the GOAT. Kristen, I would have been like, just it ended too quick.
Yeah. So then will Kristen ever be able to pass Paige?
Yes, because I don't think she needs to accomplish as much as Kristen or as Paige did, but I think she still needs to go for another, you know, 3-4 years and continue to be dominant.
Yeah, off of feel, it feels like it hasn't been long enough.
Yeah, so
it's getting
would say,
closer though.
If she retired this year, would she be the GOAT as in truly the greatest player of all time? Yes, no doubt.
Okay.
But would you have an argument for it other than I saw it? No. because like you wouldn't have the world titles, you wouldn't have the major titles, you wouldn't have the NT titles, you wouldn't have any of the titles. But you would just have the argument of like, you watched her play. Yeah. And I watched Paige Pierce in her prime. I've watched Kristen Tatar in her prime. Kristen Tatar in her prime would, on average, I think, beat Paige Pierce in her prime. That would be the only argument you'd have.
So long since I've seen Paige Pierce in her prime.
Would she technically be the GOAT? In my opinion, yes. But I don't think you'd have an argument for it. So for her to really be considered the greatest of all time, she needs at least another 4 years, I think, of dominance.
It would,
because she has to start... Because Paige has some crazy stats out there that, like, she's not going to pass her in majors. Not enough time left. It's going to be hard for her to catch her world title-wise. She's going to have to basically win them all.
Yeah.
Because, like, Kristen is starting her USA touring career close to 30s when she started it.
It would be like this.
So that's the tough part.
It would be like, well, kind of almost what happened, but I was going to think about a player like Jokic, but it would be like if a player entered the NBA... like oddly late in their career. Let's say they were playing overseas, for example, came over to the NBA, won back-to-back-to-back MVPs and finals, three in a row, both of them, and then just left the scene. Like, that was it. There would be a lot of people who were like, that's the greatest basketball player I ever saw, potentially. Let's just say that they really did look that good. But trying to make the argument as a GOAT, it would be really tough. Would be really tough because it'd be like, well, they just weren't around long enough. And then there'd be people like, well, but they only ever won when they were here. And like, it would be very complicated. And maybe that's not the perfect example, but like, it's whenever it's really quick like that, it's tough to really set in people's minds.
Yeah. We'll go with this next one. Disc Golf is Life said, has the media consolidation made post-production content worse? We now have one card coverage that gives the whole story instead of a first, second, and third card coverage.
I don't know if it's made it worse. I guess maybe, like, what consolidation specifically are they talking about?
Like, basically, Jomez is the only one doing Pro Tour coverage, more or less, because Gatekeeper is now doing, like, highlight, basically.
So what I would say is, I don't know if it's, I mean, Jomez has always kind of been the cream of the crop, but I would say there used to be, different kinds of styles when it came to post-produce, and now you're only getting, like, one. So I think that is a thing where if, like, you weren't a huge fan of the Jomez style, for example, like, there was different flavors of commentary and things like that. And yeah, like, those other people would be focusing more heavily on the cards they were given. So I guess I get that, but I don't know. I'm not a huge post-produced guy anymore. It's tough for me to, like, really input on that.
To me, I think it's made it better, more or less, because if I'm in a situation where I'm watching Jomez, which I have been before, nowadays I basically only consume live. But if I am watching Jomez, it's because I don't have the time to watch live, which means I sure as heck don't have the time to watch first, second, and third card coverage. So being able to watch one product and get the entire story of the round and see if something crazy happens, because I'll never forget when Smashbox was the only people doing live and it was just one camera behind and you had Terry walking with them, and the live coverage was as good as it could have been, but compared to what we have now, trash. Right, because it's just there was literally like one or two cameras. There wasn't someone switched. Like it wasn't the same. So when I would watch Jomez and someone from Chase Card would win, I instantly felt like my time was wasted. I was like, are you kidding me? I just watched this whole round and I didn't get to see so and so win.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen anymore. Because now on Jomez you have the Chase Card check-ins and you're seeing the storyline develop. So like if someone's getting hot from Chase Card, you're gonna know about it and you're getting to watch their shots.
Right.
To me, that's a way better product because you can consume one piece of content, see the whole story of the round, and that's that. Because like, if you watch it, and nowadays, if I'm going back, I would have watched it and then I would have seen someone from Chase Card win. Well, now I already know that guy from Chase Card wins. Am I really going to go watch the Chase Card coverage? Maybe, but now I have to sit down and rewatch the 18 holes I just watched of a worse card overall just to see the one guy win.
Definitely a bummer.
So like, to me, I think the media consolidation has made post-production better. It's made the second and third card coverage worse, yes, but overall I think it's made better.
Really bums you out if you were like looking forward to watch one of your favorite players on one of those seconds.
Yeah, like if one of your favorite players got to like Chase Card and they didn't perform well, so you aren't going to see them on Jomez, then that's like, ah, dang it. But that's like the only thing I can really think of. Connor Dudley. First off, Connor, he spells his name exactly like yours.
No what? Way.
Yeah.
What? No way.
That's impossible.
Yeah.
That's insane.
He said, what could the PDGA do to add more value to their membership? As it currently exists, it seems that it's like a mere tournament player's tax. Trevor mentioned he hasn't renewed since last year, which seems common as active PDGA memberships are reportedly down.
Yeah. What could they do to add value? Let's see. I mean, man, if you gave me a time to make a list, I could give you so many. Because you're right. Right now, they're banking on you're only going to get people to – well, it depends on who you're targeting, right? Because if you are going to play – like, I would renew if I played a single tournament this year, most likely. Because the fees, well,
it's $10 bucks.
Maybe not a single
to
tournament.
To make the fees wipe, you have to play five. But stats-wise,
yeah,
is the interesting
I want the
part.
Stats, you know, and that sort of thing. So maybe two tournaments. There's a chance if I only played one, I wouldn't renew. So the key thing is, who are you targeting as the PDGA? I think you should try to get people in that aren't just playing tournaments, right? You know, I think that you should try to do that, and I just don't think they've ever really been focusing on that. You know, because right now, what are you, you know, you're getting a subscription to a magazine that you're probably not going to read. You know, I think they're on the right track with like the Disc Golf Network discount, because that's back, right? You get you get a discount. So like, that's the right track. I think your membership should give you access to things. And then also, I don't know, maybe there's more physical incentives too. Like, maybe you do get a disc when you get your membership. Like, you only get one when you, the first year you sign up for free, then you have to buy it. Like, you pay a lot of money for, like, throw in a disc, or at least like a mini. Like, give us something more than what you get in the renewal package, which is like a dog tag and maybe a sticker. Like, I don't know, they just don't make it, they don't make it super special. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to think more on like specific, like if it was like events or things like that. I just know like when you're a member, you should feel like it grants you access to things. And right now, it's really just like you don't have to pay as much for a tournament. You have a rating.
Yeah, how it currently sits, which it makes sense, is the Professional Disc Golf Association. Like, that's what it stands for, right? So the number of active PDGA members going down doesn't worry me at all, because like, you can go to a local course and see that the sport has had a lot of players, because like, I'm the only person that I know and interact with regularly, other than like touring pros, that is an active PDGA member. No one at the company is. Everyone plays disc golf. None of our I guess Jason and Brad might be. I think they are, because they play tournaments. But like our Bible study group, those guys play. I mean, they're literally blowing up our phone right now about playing. None of them have even, they probably don't even know what the PDGA is.
Yeah.
Right? You go to your local store course, like, there is the amount of players that play regularly that have no clue what the PDGA is and have no interest in playing a tournament yet is crazy. It's crazy high. So I wouldn't let the number of active PDGA members scare you about the sport.
Well, I also think that the lifespan, so we had the COVID golfers get in, they got, you know, it takes a little bit. They start playing tournaments. I think they're at the part of their lifespan right now where a lot of them are moving away from tournament disc golf. They started playing it. Their schedule got more busy. They're moving away from it. So I think that there was like a huge hill that's probably decreasing.
Yeah. But if the PDGA, because if the PDGA, for me, the main reason I'm an active member is I run tournaments. I run like two or three a year. And you have to be a certified official to run a tournament, which means you got to be a PDGA member to run a tournament.
So expensive.
That's the main reason I am one. I don't play tournaments. So if I wasn't running a tournament in a calendar year, probably wouldn't be a PDGA member, because that is the benefit. And I think the PDGA knows that, right? So I don't think they're interested in doing more. But if like, if you want it to be more than a tournament player's tax and more than just the rating, then I think their key would be like strategic partnerships, where if you're a PDGA member, and I know they do discounts like certain hotels, but like PDGA members get, you know, 40% off Merrell shoes. They get 35% off at their first purchase here. They get
the discount
on one of these like disc golf instructional places.
Yeah, give
they
people
get,
an opportunity to make some of that feedback without cashing in tournaments.
Like almost,
you know?
Almost also treat it like a Patreon. Like maybe they get access to an exclusive forum where they can, you know, their pros are pop in there and do live Q&A's. Maybe they get like do benefit if the PDGA is interested.
Shoot some clinics. Have access to some clinics.
It would have to be stuff like that where I can look at it and be, Or the other flip side of that coin is lower the price. Because now if it was
$25
or make it an option where it's like, hey, it can be $50 and you get a disc and a subscription to the Disc Golfer magazine and you get all these benefits, or you can have a bare bones membership.
Is it like 70 or 75 for a
75
pro?
75 for a pro. Yeah. But that's for a pro. The most PGA members aren't. Because that's
for
only
AM?
If you've cashed.
You're paying 50 for AM?
Yeah, 50's an AM. So if you haven't cashed at a tournament, you don't have to pay $75.
Should have never cashed.
And even then, you don't have to accept the cash if you want to stay AM.
Should have never took
but
the cash.
But the majority of memberships are going to be that $50 price point. But like if you're like $50, you get a disc and a subscription to the Disc Golfer magazine plus whatever other benefit they come up with. Or you can pay $30 for not the disc, not the Disc Golf. Like they would probably just cutting it to 30 already see. Because now it really is like, well, if I'm playing one tournament, you know, one tournament, am I going to pay $50 so I don't have to pay the $10 fee and I can see my rating? Maybe. Am I going to pay $30? Probably. Because, like, you get your rating.
I miss tournaments.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
I will say that.
So,
I miss them.
That's to me is, like, it depends. I from how I perceive the PDGA, I think they're okay being a tournament player's tax. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of because the tournament player is who they exist for, more or less.
I really miss just walking in with my two over and just, like, holding my breath as I look at the live scoring to see what my rating's going to be. Or better yet, it was really... Back in the day, you guys have the luxury now of getting like an estimate on your ratings like as it happens. Back in my day, you had to wait until the TD submitted it, and that could be a week if you're dealing with some of the TDs around here.
Yeah.
And you're just like refreshing, like, what if my rating came in yet? Oh, age 62. I miss that, man.
There's a few questions about sandbagging. I'm not going to get to those, unfortunately.
I'm going to be firing these off on a bait night this week, so you guys just tune in on Wednesday.
I'm just going to hit...
This is a gold mine.
I'm going to hit this last one, which you'll probably use on debate night. This will be the last one here. This is from Rome. He said, was Innova correct in not overpaying pros and handing out huge contracts during the COVID boom? It appears the bubble's right on the edge or has already burst. Active PDGA memberships down, low pro tour attendance, increasingly expensive discs. So the question is like, was Innova correct?
I would say the Ricky Wysocki disc price tells you yes.
Yeah.
I think like MVP, I think it all came down to who you invested in. Because I think like MVP investing in Simon and now Eagle, like the amount of money they shelled out for Simon, which I'm pretty sure was a lot, I think it was worth every penny. I also think they invest in their infrastructure a lot, but I think that, yes, most of the deals, like, I can't think of many other ones that were, like, big deals that I'd be like, oh, good, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, they're...
Oh, you're trying to think of good value ones.
Good value
deals. I think
deals.
The good deals are
like
the...
Like, Kristen's deal was good?
Kristen, Paul, Simon, Eagle.
Yeah.
Those are the good deals.
But, yes, I think that Innova, we've always... I mean, I still don't know how I feel about them from a business standpoint, whether I feel like... And I do know that Calvin got paid pretty well, but he's kind of been their guy. But I think that they have at least been smart to, you know, if they are going to pay somebody, keeping it a pretty small circle. I think they realize the power of having one superstar sometimes can be just as good as having three, as long as you are just consistently highlighting that player over and over again. So,
well, I think I...
Certainly a lot of companies probably wish they could take it back. I'll say that.
I don't think that because even the bet on Ricky and the bet on Kona at the time, which the Kona deal was always like, is it going to work out? The Ricky deal, you know, even the bet on those players, I can understand where a company was coming from, right? To me, I think where Innova's the most correct is not overpaying the next level down of players. Because I think there's a lot of players where you have... the top big dogs, right? The Simon, the Eagle, the Gannon, the Paul, the Calvin, the Ricky. Those guys are your plastic movers, right? Where I think a lot of companies wasted a lot of money is that next level down.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Where they might be paying people $50,000 to $100,000 a year. That tier pro, I think that's where Innova bet right. Is because a lot of that money, you could just light it on fire, to be completely honest with you.
How
you
much? Know? I got a question for you because we, I mean.
So I think that to finish the question for, I think that's where Innova's correct is not necessarily overpaying the top, because I do think that Calvin's paid very well, Sexton's paid very well, Germ's paid very well, but I think they accept and understand those guys are moving plastic for us. Mm-hmm. Everyone else, you have to earn your paycheck. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of, and not saying no one else has a base salary, but comparison from what I understand from behind the scenes is like, Innova pays the least if you're on that tier, and I think they're right.
How much in that? How much would you pay out of pocket personally if you were able to pay for an Excel spreadsheet that had a list of every single professional disc golf contract with their manufacturer and any sponsor? You could look up any, it's a database. You could look up any player and it's going to tell you where all their sponsors and how much they're getting paid in their contract structure. This is what you have access to.
Is it can I use it publicly?
You can do whatever you
want.
Like
I can release it?
You can do whatever you want with it.
I'd pay $5,000.
I'm surprised it's even that low. I thought you'd even go higher.
I don't know. Well, if I can talk about it on Grip Lock and stuff, like that thing's priceless.
It's true. Let's say it's you just know, and you can now say things on Grip Lock like alluding to it. You just can't.
Well, people know
them.
That I know.
No, they won't know that you know. Well, like internally, we will. But like the people we're talking to, you're just gonna be, and they're never gonna be able to, like, think about it. You're never gonna be able to get corrected by anybody, because if anybody who does know is gonna be like, oh yeah, he was right on. So it's not like you're going to be saying things that are wrong. Now, what would you pay for that?
But one? I can't tell people the information. I can be very confident
in
my statement.
You can say things like, yeah, I think Matty O, you know, he's probably getting $1 million over the 4 years they signed
him
for.
So I can say his number. I just can't be like, I know for
correct,
a fact.
Correct.
$5,000 still. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
because most of the time, if I talk like that, it's because I do know what I'm saying.
I'm just thinking,
most of the time, it's like, I don't know. I think this player's probably, it's probably because I do know.
Yeah, but they're for exact money value, like 90% of the contracts, we have no clue.
Yeah, no exact money value. I would love to know.
I would just like, it yeah, would be the be most crazy. Fascinating thing, because we would see things that would make our jaws drop.
Yeah.
Like, huh?
Who would you think, just your gut check, is the most underpaid pro?
Yeah.
And the most overpaid pro?
Well, I know who the most overpaid pros are.
I was just asking. If you don't want to answer, you don't have to answer.
Yeah, I don't know. The thing is, like, underpaid pro, I bet you last year Isaac Robinson was probably like the guy you would say is most underpaid pro. I bet you now it's probably somebody like, realistically this year it's probably AB, or like a Kyle Klein, maybe an Antela. Well, he just restructured. It's probably not Antela. But there are probably some people.
My answer for this year would be Ezra Robinson.
Because
I bet he's on like a base, maybe no guarantee contract, and he's like one of the top guys.
Rodolin,
not like the top.
Rodolin's probably not making crazy bank.
I don't know. He seems he might have just walked out of the contract room.
Listen, I was past that.
I had to bring it up, man. I thought it was funny.
I was about to say something like, well, I guess he only does play 16 holes around. That's an interesting one. That, man, I might have to put that on debate night. There is content.
Well, you know, I'll just leave the rest. you can take these. There's also a bunch more on Twitter.
Oh, I finna.
So, all right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Next week, we'll get into the Disc Golf Pro Tour Q Series, because I think there's some questions people have on, like, what the heck is the Q Series?
And next week, we're going to
where can you find the rankings, because they're not on the Pro Tour website. Don't worry, I found them. I did the research.
Wait, you're not gonna be here next week?
I can call in.
It's gonna be sad.
All right, fine. I won't call in.
Gosh, I gotta. No, you're
fine. Nope, not gonna call in.
I definitely need you to.
Nope, not gonna call in.
Really need you to.
What are you gonna do about it?
I think last year when you went to the beach, we did like a
we just had the Hunter segment.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the year before that, I like tried calling in like six different ways.
Yeah.
It just never worked.
We're probably gonna run that again, because those seem to work pretty smooth.
Well, we can just use Riverside.
Yeah, but then why didn't we do that?
Well, before we didn't have that I think we can use that setup Riverside.
We'll talk about it. We'll figure it out, guys.
I'll be on it in some way, shape, or form.
Well, then, because the week after, you're going to figure it out for me. It's vacation season, people.
Vacation season, people.
Finally.
All right.
You excited, man?
See you next week. Stoked.
Tap it up.
Let's go.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.